Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy Solo Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. My name is Noam Dwarman. I'm here with... can you get off your iPhone?
I'm looking for the article.
Yeah, we'll get it later. With okay. Krista Montella, the great...
Misunderstood.
And great misunderstood and gifted Dove Davidoff.
Oh, wait a minute.
And, of course, Dan Natterman. So it's a big week here at the Comedy Cellar with a big Robert De Niro performance. But go ahead, Dan.
Well, I wanted to address last week there was a big blow up. We've had a few, by the way.
Yeah, I'm surprised to see you this week, Dan.
I blew up last week at Noam. I offer this not by way of excuse or apology, but by way of explanation. Firstly, he bloody well deserved it. That's the number one reason. And the second reason is that my own frustration, of course, bubbles out and oftentimes... attaches to Noam, but I haven't had a new joke work in a while, and I've been very frustrated about that.
Is that right, Dan?
Yeah. My last new joke that worked was about 4 weeks ago, and I do get very antsy when I don't have a new one work because I feel like that's all I have. Unfortunately, I have to be three times as good to get half the results as everybody else, because as you know, Noam, there's a conspiracy against me in show business. That's the only explanation that makes any sense. I've turned it over in my head 100 times, and the only explanation for my career is... Yeah. That the that there's somebody up there in power is trying to destroy me.
You know, do you ever worry that you've written your last joke? I mean,
no, I haven't written my last joke, but I'm trying to write. You understand? I have to have the best jokes because.
Yeah, but I mean, like Paul, not the last joke, like Paul McCartney.
You're like a black guy in the 1930s trying to get into college.
I got
to
be twice as good.
I understand. You got to be twice as good. I understand.
At some point, Paul McCartney wrote his last really good song.
Yeah.
And as he was writing it, right. He had no idea.
He reached peak oil.
He was reading his.
Well, they
now
could
you're
be fracking.
Your last joke.
Now you're fracking.
That's an analogy I made a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Is that I'm fracking now for jokes, whereas they used to. When you start, you've got all the oil on the practically on the surface of the land. And now there's no more oil. I got to frack to get a joke.
First of all, fracking is my analogy. You've all heard me make that analogy, and you use
not
it for,
with regard.
You're taking it for your own purposes.
Not
but that's
with
okay.
regard to jokes. I don't.
No,
believe
not with regard to
you.
Jokes.
Well, okay.
But isn't there a theory that you get better as you keep going? So you should work the opposite.
Well,
I
no,
mean, you
but,
should.
But all the stuff that's important in my life,
experience.
I've already talked about. More experience. I do the same thing every day for the past 20 years.
Well, that's why you
change
don't do
it
jokes.
Up.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's why Dove Davidoff. Is getting married and wants to have a kid for that
I'm
very
have a kid
reason.
For the jokes.
For the jokes.
Man. For the
you
jokes.
You should go to swinging clubs with him.
The problem is you tap a well of oil and there's only so much in the ground, and at some point you have to find a new well, a new vein, a new rich vein.
Let me tell you something. If Dan spent like a month at those
swing clubs.
Trapeze swing clubs.
What he would come
he
back.
He would
with.
Have a lot of fucking material.
Word, a barrel full.
And you could probably write it off.
You could probably write
work
it off.
Related.
Well, maybe
that's
so.
Right.
Well, that might
two
be worth doing.
$2,000 in condoms, $3,000 in admission fees.
Exactly.
Condoms. So does he. We'll see.
Exactly.
I also am under a slight handicap here. I know I'm not referring to my general mental state, but I am slightly handicapped because most of the money I make doing corporate gigs and gigs where I have to be clean.
Yeah.
And so, and politically correct. Now, I guess you could argue if I really made a splash as a more edgy comic, then I could do theaters. But, you know, for now, I'm doing a lot of corporates and I'm doing a lot of gigs where I have to be clean. And so I have to work under those constraints. So so talking about a swing club, although you're absolutely right, you're right on point, as you often are.
Wouldn't work in those venues.
It would not work at those venues.
No.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but you could probably do it in a way that it would work. But in any event, the point is that you need to get outside your comfort zone, Dan, and take a vacation. I don't know. Get a Dominican girl to
marry you.
To sit on your face. Yeah. I don't. Yeah. Something. You need something to jar you.
Well, I don't. I don't necessarily disagree with you in that regard.
I mean, it's easy to say just become irrepressible, you know. I mean, just turn it out, you know, shoot an hour, get a thing, write a sketch, go on it, like, you know, I mean, you're doing the podcast, it's like, I don't know, there's no one specific answer, right? But if you look at any model that has worked for anybody, I mean, usually it just involves them bumping up against the wall or having a great smile to begin with, you know. I mean, Kevin Hart had it, you understand why he connects with the public, whether or not you like him.
Are you indirectly saying you understand why Dan doesn't connect with the public?
No. I'm saying that. I'm saying he's a less grinning fit. You know, I mean, it's a less. You know, I mean,
I think that is what you're
there
saying.
Are people who are a bit prickly. No, you know, I mean, Woody Allen was a bit like that too. I mean, And there are lots of brilliant people, but George Carlin is not a guy who immediately connected through television. He's a guy who just kept writing specials. I ordered a salad 28 fucking minutes ago. Anyway.
You ordered a salad? Dub ordered a salad 28 minutes ago.
Ordered a Fiesta salad 27 minutes ago.
So can we talk about...
Yeah, go ahead, introduce the subject.
Now, according to Liz, Norton and Nick are coming, but I don't see either of them.
Well, they'll be here by and by.
So we had a big thing happening at the Comedy Cell this week. Robert De Niro.
I was shooting that the last 2 days.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
I mean, a little bit, you know. I mean,
Robert De Niro
was
shooting
part.
A movie about stand-up comedy,
yes.
And the final scene, I believe, is at the Comedy Cell, and he's been doing some shooting here for a couple days.
Yes.
And yesterday he actually performed in front of... both in front of an audience of extras, and then he also came up in front of a regular show audience, but he didn't really do jokes. But oh, here's Jim. And Jim, this is Jim Norton.
Yes, the great Jim Norton.
The great Jim Norton.
Great Jim Norton.
And Jim got to do a scene with Robert De Niro.
Yes.
Yeah. Jim Norton. And Jim walked in here, and he was like, I've never quite, you know, there's such a thing as vibe. I can't explain why Jim looked different than I ever saw him before,
yes.
But he was gushing. He literally, like, trying to hold in a smile, like he got a lollipop. I mean, he was really, really happy.
That's the difference between Jim and me.
Why?
Why is that?
I did a scene with Robert De Niro, and I'm not nearly as happy.
What scene?
I didn't grow up with the happiness. I had a small part with him and Grodin 2 days ago.
I was happy.
I'm not knocking you for being happy. Jimmy's
thrilled.
A big film fan. He can quote lots of things.
Thrilled. It was fun because it was done. It was done. You know, once something is finished, you can enjoy it.
Right.
You know? And I felt good that we had the one little scene where he walks by and then the one where he sits at the table. And it was fun to be able to improv. And I liked it because I wasn't nervous. Like, it was really weird.
Why weren't you nervous?
I don't know. I just wasn't. It was like some things are so big because I like De Niro so much that you go full circle. I was doing an interview one time. Ozzy's label asked me to interview him one-on-one for this record release. And it was just going to be me and him for an hour. And it was such an important thing to me. I was so petrified that I went completely upside down and felt no fear at all. Like, one step backward, and I would have been immobile with being frightened. But it was so far. That's kind of how it was with this.
I would have been totally just paralyzed.
That was fun, yelling shit at him. And I know in that world, he's less comfortable than we are. So it kind of felt...
That's a good point.
In the world of stand-up comedy.
Yeah, or in the world of sitting there, and we had to yell at his character when he walked by... and just Taylor Hackford telling me, just, you know, if you want to come up with a line or something, and knowing I was okay at doing that, and I wasn't like, okay, do a Shakespearean scene with him.
Right.
Where
right.
It's all him and I'm out of my league. This is right. Something I felt comfortable in.
Hurling insults at a passerby.
Absolutely.
Very comfortable.
Exactly. Yes, ask an older gentleman how his asshole is.
You asked him how his asshole was?
Yeah. And then I asked him personally as he walked by. He enjoyed it, though. You know, people are too I get because of who he is, but people are too... I think sometimes with major celebrities, people talk too gently to them, and they don't treat them like people, and they hate that.
De Niro once here, and would you believe this character? He comes up to me, and he says, hey, you were funny. I said, you jackass, I wasn't on stage. I'm adding a few extra words that I didn't say.
Yes.
And he said, yeah, you were. You were right downstairs. I said, you buffoon.
He thought you were Rogel?
He thought I was Rogel. That's the second fucking time that's happened. One time a stripper came up to me after a show, and she said, hey, you want to hang out with us? I said, sure, I guess so. She said, yeah, you were great on stage. I said, you twat. I said, I wasn't on stage. She said, yeah, you had the joke about the two wallets in your back pocket because you have no ass. I said, no, that's another guy. That's Rogel.
Oh, imagine if you were disappointed that she mistaken you for Rogel. Imagine how she would have felt. An hour later. Here's that guy we just saw. What?
Had she been more attractive, I would have said, that's me, two wallet Johnny.
Oh, God.
I wish I experienced the same boost that other people experience. I've always been interested in what is it about seeing somebody on a screen and then you get a real... I've never felt that.
Well, I think that De Niro is one of the only actors and that people...
I'm talking about people in general. I'm not talking about just your experience. So for him, it may be just an individual thing. But in general, I get a lot of that. Oh, that's amazing. I don't see what's so amazing about it. I don't get it.
Amazing about meeting De Niro,
meaning whoever.
Well, if it's a person of formidable talent, it would be interesting to meet them and talk about...
Duff doesn't get emotional.
But I'm not talking about interesting. I didn't say it wouldn't be interesting. I said, it's not like, oh my God. Like, it's none of that energy I get. I don't, well, I'm not saying it wouldn't be interesting to talk, actually talk to somebody. I'm not making this up. This is how I've been for my whole life.
So you're totally at ease talking to legendary people of legendary fame and talent?
No, it's not about ease. It's about getting very caught up in the idea of bigness for the sake of, in some ways. If you introduced me to a brilliant musician, I would be just a, you know, it's not a
He's saying fame
in and
of itself.
I don't know what he's talking about.
I think he's saying, in and of itself.
And I've known Dove for a while. I can't always understand what he's saying, but not much of the time again. I think what he's
what I mean?
I think what he's saying is the fame in and of itself does not impress Dove Davidoff.
Yes. Well, sometimes when you're, what it implies, if you like somebody that much.
If you have a personal thing with them, but that's not what I'm talking about.
But, it's something, well, even if you don't like them as much, you recognize where somebody is in the business. When you're doing something with them or when you meet them, you feel like you're kind of closer to where you want to be in the business. It's an elation for that reason, too. Like,
but
wow,
you're talking about USB. I'm talking about people in general and their experience of that.
But it might represent
for you, it might really represent something.
It might mean that to them, too. You know, like,
to the
I don't
average
know.
Person, it doesn't mean it doesn't represent anything with regard to where they are in the business. They're not in the business.
Well,
they're
look,
the average person.
So sometimes, every now and again, people say to me, hey, I saw you on TV. And right. I don't know how to react to that because
right.
thank you doesn't seem like an appropriate response since you didn't say I was any good on TV.
Right.
You just said you saw me on TV. But I think in their minds, being on TV is a compliment.
That's what I'm talking about.
Well, I thought they said that, but they said they saw me with one.
No, but I know a lot of people that got involved in this business, and the reality of a set is, one, they're fucking boring. In general, unless you have a huge part, they're really boring. And the reality of people that get caught up in the business, like, oh my God, I got a part. Had you put that energy into something else, maybe you would have made $1 million. Now you walked away with $6 grand in 3 episodes. I'm just saying there should be some measure.
I think you're hijacking this thing here.
I'm sorry.
This,
go ahead.
No, I mean, I think it's.
I thought it was an interesting discussion.
No, it is. Of course, it is. But when I say hijacking, I mean that you're putting it into your own terms. But I would think that for a guy like Jim or acting to be there with one of the, I started to say before, one of the few actors that everybody kind of does recognize really has a special talent because most actors are just whatever, right? But this is a guy who's really gifted.
No, I agree. Yeah, I understand.
And been in half of the greatest movies
Iconic.
That have ever been made,
yes.
you know? And then you have to be there and acting with him. It's like
yes.
it's like sometimes if somebody like George Benson came and sat in with us one time, like,
yes.
I can't play a note. Like, you know, it's like
yes.
you're acting with Robert De Niro.
I was
but he
doing
wasn't
it.
Scary.
I was doing it 2 days ago.
He wasn't intimidating. He was very,
I agree.
He was nice. Yeah. He was quiet.
Yeah.
He was not uncomfortable at all in that way.
Yes,
now,
I
now here's
totally
the question, the $1 million or maybe
I would still be petrified.
Several $1 million question. Can this movie break the stand-up comedy movie curse? And you know the curse I'm talking about.
Yes, it's true.
Every stand-up comedy movie has been El Stinko.
Well, it didn't have the look of a high-budget movie anyway. I mean, it was shot.
That can be better sometimes.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah, but
like,
it's going to be a small
especially
film.
Recently.
Well, then it doesn't necessarily need to make as much money to be profitable.
That's
but,
what I meant, yeah.
You know, Judd Apatow, he made all these movies. He couldn't lose money if he tried. Then he comes up with Funny People. Bombs away.
Because what happens is these guys, and this is, I didn't even see that, but a lot of times the producers are throwing in jokes and what they think stand-up is, and they don't when they see what comedians are really like, they don't want to portray us as a bunch of guys that just sit around fucking talking to each other that way for real. They get actors that are never mean to each other.
Right.
Instead of guys just sitting around, will you fucking sit out? Like, that's how we talk to each other.
Right.
If they showed that, it might be interesting.
And also, it's hard to represent stand-up comedy
on
stage because... It takes us years to come up with some of our acts, and they have some scriptwriter writing a stand-up comedy act very fast, and it's not going to be as powerful as our acts that we've worked on for years. So it's hard to put good stand-up comedy in a movie.
Right.
I mean...
But this movie, I would assume, employs stand-up comedians.
But are they
going to
use their real
and,
jokes?
Right?
Are they going to use the stand-up comedians?
Yes.
Isn't this the movie Jeff is involved that he spoke about while he was
Jeff's
on?
Not really involved much.
Oh, okay.
Jessica's a big part of it now.
Oh, okay.
Jessica who?
Jessica Kirsten.
Oh, Jessica Kirsten.
Yeah, he's. I mean, I don't know what we should say, what we're not supposed to say.
I had to perform while he was pacing back and forth. They had a real audience there. The show started whatever time it was, and I'm doing stand-up, and fucking they're like, De Niro's going to be pacing in the back in three different outfits, and they tell the audience, don't look at him. You have to look at Jim Norton.
So, oh, God.
Like, really an impossible
feat. But you killed.
Feat. Yeah, it was good. I mean, I think because I acknowledged that up front, but that was a very weird setup.
I also saw something in you that I hadn't... I mean, I knew this, but I hadn't seen it in a while, that you... And this goes to your general calmness in general. Like, you really do use the cellar to work out material.
Yeah.
A lot of people say they do that, but they don't do that. So then last night, it wasn't like workout. It wasn't a workout material thing.
His best of Jim.
It wasn't even. And but he. It was subtle. Like he wasn't. He didn't like turn it on. Hey, like Mr. Show Business. But he was like a laser beam. He destroyed. I mean, there wasn't one moment that wasn't. Didn't you feel
Thank
that
you.
Way?
I felt good. Thank you. Yeah.
It really did. You know, and it was a big headwind. I mean, it's true. The director was, you know, De Niro's walking around, and everybody has to try not to look at him. And Jim doesn't usually like to play the underground, but you killed in the underground yesterday, and it was a tough situation.
Yeah, it was weird, but I was comfortable with it because it was such a bizarre situation. I don't know why I felt very calm about the whole experience.
And did they just say do your thing, or did they kind of pre-approve jokes, or
they
just said do whatever?
No, Taylor Hackford was really nice, and I didn't like. Normally, it would freak me out. How am I being brought on? I was home right before that. I was only going to come down for the late show, mm-hmm. and then Liz called me and said Taylor's asking if you want to bring De Niro on. I literally was eating a chicken dinner in my underwear. I fucking put my pants on, put my jacket on, took the dinner, and threw it into that fucking garbage thing on the way out, and it was in a cab in less than 2 minutes. So that's what the only reason I got down there originally to introduce him before the set you saw. And I didn't. Didn't matter to me what was happening.
Taylor Hackford is the director,
yeah.
And he's the son. His dad is also in.
No, he directed Officer and Gentleman, Ray.
Oh, okay.
Devil's Advocate, which
Devil's
I think is so
Advocate.
Underrated.
Oh, this guy's been around a long. This guy's no spring chicken.
I went to college with his son. That's why
okay.
I thought.
Okay. Devil's Advocate is one of the only modern great Pacino performances to me.
Amazing, yeah. Charlize Theron was great in that. Even Keanu Reeves.
Oh, that was
really
such
good.
A good movie.
I loved it.
Yeah,
that was a good movie.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
So what else? What was it? What
well,
was like? And Esty did a scene with De Niro, by the way.
Nick DiPaolo
was
here.
Nick,
the great
Nick
DiPaolo.
Come sit here, Nick. Come. Let Nick in here. I'll get out.
Hey, Nick.
Yeah, I just drove an hour and 20 minutes. Somebody's getting up.
Okay. You sit down, Nick. I'll sit here.
So we're talking, obviously, about the big De Niro movie.
Grab your headphones.
I'm gonna.
Oh, he's out of breath.
Nick is out of breath. He's drinking cappuccino.
Sprinted 100 fucking yards.
He just had to park. It's a very challenging scenario. Explain to the audience what Nick is up against.
Thank you.
So we're talking about interactions with De Niro, how you felt.
Well, were you last night? Were you on the show last night?
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
I don't believe in stand-up comedy anymore.
You can talk to Dan about that.
I bought a magic book today.
It was fun, though.
It was fucking great.
Wasn't it more comfortable than you thought it would be?
He's just a shy little guy. He really is.
Well, Dove, you were saying that he was like a Superman without a cape. I don't know. I mean, that's a probably oft-used analogy, but
no, that was in a different context. I used it. No, yeah, he's a nice guy.
That's Attell's father. No, he had a cape. That's right.
Yeah.
It was weird. I was telling them it wasn't scary for some reason, just because it was much more our comfortable area than his.
That's right. That's exactly right. And we're sitting at the table, you, me, and Esty. I mean, we couldn't have been in a more
right.
More familiar environment and.
But what was your scene? You didn't do the stand-up comedy club scene. What was your scene?
At the table
with him with Jimmy and Esty at the table.
Oh, just at
and Hannibal. Yeah,
we were. How many setups did you have? You had a master, and then how many subs? How long did you sit here for?
We weren't here. We were in the other underground. It was a better place to shoot, I think.
Yeah, the other club.
We shot for 12 hours. Bored the fuck out of
it. Well, you must have had a real scene then.
No, I didn't have much of a scene. It was just a lot of coverage and a lot of angles.
I had one scene. I slow danced with De Niro for like 10 minutes, and then the movie ended.
It was fun though, man. We had two quick scenes, and they let us improv, and we, me and Nick would go, are you going to say this? I'll do that. Okay, it was just fun, man.
Well, exactly. The day was, you know, thank God you're with somebody you can trust, and you know, we weren't trying
you
to
You don't hug. Trust Jimmy.
I do.
Yeah,
I really do.
I mean, as an actor, of course.
I mean, but
he wouldn't let me share his beverage.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, in the context of a scene, maybe.
Did anybody find it interesting that this guy started his day at 9 in the morning and was still working at 2 or 1 in the
animal.
Morning?
He's an animal.
Well, it's called cocaine.
I mean, you don't think of
I'm
Robert
kidding.
De Niro doing that, right? You figured he wouldn't even tolerate that.
Well, he's also
that.
70 plus years old.
That's the
amazing
part.
You don't have a choice
part.
In a 27-day shoot. I mean, when I've worked with these guys, but you know, you don't have a choice. You go in the trailer. If you want to make that kind of money, you commit to the project. You go sleep for 3 hours and you go back on set.
But it's still pretty amazing.
All right, Mr. Gyllenhaal,
take
it easy. I'm just saying. No. I mean, that's.
And
I don't think it's that. You know, yeah.
Well,
who wouldn't work all day?
Nothing. 72.
Plenty of things impress me. Dove has lost all sense. Of childhood wonder.
Yes, he has. That's right.
Is that what it is?
And the other thing is, I noticed,
he's a great actor. I'm not saying
he's
not.
I was really curious about this. He took direction. Did you know there were
times? Yeah, from Esty.
Yeah.
Remember? That was the highlight of the day. The first time we ran the scene.
Yeah.
The first time we ran it, De Niro comes in, Esty's supposed to spot him or something, Esty delivers a line, and then De Niro delivers something, and the director steps in and goes, Esty, no, you stepped on Bob's line. No, I didn't. I have two lines, and then he said this, and then I say that. Yeah. And the director goes, holy shit, she's right. And De Niro, I saw him snickering out of the corner of his De Niro left. That was the highlight of the day. Esty was like fucking, I called her the Elizabeth Taylor of Israel. Yeah. She's just bitching all day about her.
Yeah, how hot it is.
How hot it was. How long she was.
She was fucking great.
By the way, did anybody read the script? Did anybody get the script?
I didn't even get the little sides.
I'd seen a much older version. I have a copy of the size just to have us all on a call sheet together.
I had nothing. I was laying in my bed. And this is how negative I am. I'm laying in the bed the night before going, I wouldn't doubt if I got down there, everybody had sides and I didn't. I'm sitting there. I get down here. Esty's got her face in a phone. Jimmy's got his face. I go, what the fuck's going on?
I'll send you a photo of the call sheet. I mean, kind of like they were all on the same call sheet.
Nick wasn't sure he wanted to do it until he knew what the scene was. He said, you want to do a scene with De Niro? He goes, maybe. Let me know what the scene is.
Yeah. No, I didn't know De Niro. No, she has it wrong.
Nick has very discerning taste. You know, the guy's not just going to take apart like an animal.
No, exactly.
There's
no scene he wouldn't have done with De Niro.
We want you to eat cum out of Chaz Palminteri's ass. Is Bob going to be there?
No, exactly. If Bob is handing me the spoon, I'll do it. But
No, it was surreal to be there. It's not that there's no sense of childhood wonder. What I feel like is that people have been hustled to some degree by this business. The idea of thinking a set is special for the sake of, not, I'm barring De Niro, I'm saying a set in general. You hear radio programs going, we're going to give away two passes, you're going to get to sit on the set. There's nothing more boring than a film set.
Oh,
nothing.
No, absolutely.
You wait 90% of the time. And most people that have never been on a film set are like, oh my God, have I got a movie? If you've ever done movies and you're sitting next to Grodin, the guy just wants to get the fuck to lunch.
Well, that's because he's 106.
Long before that. But, you know, anyway.
It's still fun. And the way they were working it, like, there was one stupid word they wanted me to say. They wanted me to say views, and you can say you have a lot of YouTube views, but it's just like, yeah, your video got a lot of hits. It just seemed to me more the way we were talking.
Like stilted, yeah.
And I actually said something, and the director came over, and De Niro goes, nah, but he said that this is how people talk.
Jimmy stepped right up there.
And he was fine with it. Nobody was a problem, but they seemed kind of amenable to listening to certain...
They're all nice. There's no egos on a set, usually. No. I mean, usually people are cool.
Is that the whole movement now in films is towards improv? I mean,
I don't know, every
set I hear about now is
realism. I think
Dog Day Afternoon won the Academy Award for writing, and it was all improv.
That's the thing.
Actually, I think French Connection was also.
Yeah, you know.
That's the way to work. I mean, like anything else, it evolved, you know.
Yeah, people used to stick to the script. Organic. How do you not want that?
No, and then, you know, Scorsese started doing a lot of that
and
in
also,
the 70s.
And also, you know, if you have Bill Murray in a movie, like in Caddyshack, you're going to get a lot of improv, whether, I don't know if De Niro is a big improver necessarily. It depends who's in the film.
Yeah.
And who wrote it, like, and, you know, who's doing it, especially a comedy improv would help.
Yeah, but he did a ton of that stuff with Scorsese, where they just gave him the outline of the...
Woody Allen does that.
Larry David. I was excited to meet Michael Moore.
Is there an analogy anybody can think of a huge star like De Niro coming in and doing and picking the Comedy Cellar to feature in a movie, and then we talk about it on the Comedy Cellar radio show?
This might be new ground we're in here.
No, they did that with Titanic.
Did they?
Yeah, sure.
Was Grodin around? That dude's a character.
No, is he in this too?
Yeah.
I didn't get the script. Like I said, I got a text from Esty.
I sat all day next to him. All day long.
Yeah, he's a fucking pile
not a lot of
laughs.
Icon. Yeah, no,
even
no.
When he was 30, he was a miserable fuck. And
exactly.
I love him. But
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
No, excellent actor. Funny
he
guy.
Is a tremendous. Funny dude.
The director invited me to submit music for the soundtrack.
Oh, wow.
He didn't promise that he'd use it.
Right.
Cool.
Are they going to use Last Train to Clarksville?
I can't repeat it. What are you, Esty? All right, let's go.
But that's how open and nice they are. You know, he's like, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, they were nice.
So, do you know this guy Richard Stratton, the drug smuggler?
I do not.
Dick Stratton?
He's here. We're going to bring
him
up.
Okay. No. I'm not familiar with him.
No, but I've interviewed a lot of drug dealers.
Yeah, he's apparently a famous drug smuggler.
When you weren't here one week, Noam, we did interview the guy, Billy Hayes, I believe his name was, from Midnight Express. Yeah, the real dude.
Oh, wow. I think Jim was the guy who suggested that.
Really?
I talked to him, yeah. And we've interviewed
He's a lot of fun, a real nice guy. And the escape scene was completely different than the one you saw in the movie, according to him.
So they allowed us to bill Robert De Niro on the lineup last night.
Yeah, I heard.
And then at the last minute, Jim says, oh, De Niro says he's going home. I'm like, oh, shit.
We talked to him for a while after we were done shooting. He sat there with us for like 15 minutes and just chatted.
He gave us both a hug at the end.
Yeah.
So at the end of the story is we had to take the cover charge off everybody's check last night.
We didn't have to. You guys are pretty fair.
I decided to do that. Yeah, because I felt, because De Niro didn't do stand-up.
Right.
I heard he was bumped by Harvey Keitel.
Thank God, because Liz was telling me, like, you should jack up the prices. De Niro, you can charge less. No, it's just
$12. Well, isn't there something with SAG that they all have to be approved in the audience? I mean, I don't know how that, you know.
No, they weren't shooting.
That wasn't
last
being
night.
Filmed. No, they were not that part. They weren't going to shoot. He just went up and talked to them for a minute because he was tired, and I thanked him for coming.
So.
And I think that's fair that you.
Hey, here comes a homeless guy. Be careful.
Off. This way, they got to see De Niro for nothing and watch his show be taped. They got to see Ryan and they got to see Ida Rodriguez and Shang Wang and fucking Greer. So
Shang Wang.
That was a dicey set.
Yeah. Which one?
He went out there and he said, she went out there and did hickory dickory. You said it was a dicey set.
So it was late. It was supposed to start at 11 o'clock. It started like 12:30. I figured we'd just take the cover charge off and not even.
We shoot on Tuesday. It was 12 hours in the ballroom in Edison Ballroom in Midtown, and they had, 200 extras or whatever. And he was doing the scene from the podium all day long.
Did he do stand up there too?
Yeah.
I heard he was very funny at the roast.
Who wrote the stand up? Jeff Ross?
I don't know.
No, he's out of it, isn't he?
I don't know. I have no idea.
He's pulled out of the project.
I have no idea. Some of the roast was funny.
You think this movie's good for the seller? You think it's going to...
Anything that promotes the brand is always good for the seller.
Don't you get it, Noam? God has his eye on you.
Yeah, because I think you need more people down here. I haven't seen
trouble.
What, are you going to stack people on their shoulders now in this place?
Chris Rock came in yesterday and then went over. Did he hang out with De Niro?
Yeah, well, he was upstairs with Questlove for a while, and he went in and said hello to him. But it's so funny, when De Niro's in the room, nobody cares where the celebrities are around.
Yeah, exactly.
He was with Edie Falco, and then he was with Leslie Mann and Chris Rock, and everyone is just like, there's people in the way of De Niro viewing. No one cares whoever else is in the room.
Yeah. He's one of a very, very small group of celebrities. Like
someone told me that years ago.
Him and Steve Guttenberg.
Even on a set, people stare at him. Gene Simmons was there from Kiss, and they're one of my longest standing group of idols. Like, I love Kiss, man. When I was 7, my first fantasies in life were about Kiss. I used to fantasize that Kiss would show up to my apartment with their costumes and their makeup, and they would beat me and hurt me and throw me down the stairs and then hug me and love me and make it all better. I don't expect you to relate. I've told that story many times. I've never had an audience member go, I hear you. Hey, Bob Kelly, what's up? Dude! So I went to see Kiss at the Garden, and I'm not gonna lie, man, I get pretty starstruck most of the time. But my friend knows Gene, and she snuck me backstage to get a photo, and I couldn't talk. Like, I shook hands with all the band members, and I tried to say hello, and my mouth wouldn't work. And I am standing in front of my childhood idols. They're all behind me, and Paul Stanley reached around affectionately for the photo and put his arm on my shoulder. I was so starstruck, I took my stupid head and went, how homoerotic is that? I rested my head on the bicep of a shirtless man in heels and makeup. I swear to God, if he would have kissed my neck, I would have went, Paul.
Yeah, it's funny. It is weird because he's such a normal dude. I mean, literally, the guy couldn't be more normal when you're around him.
Well, he's shy. I mean, he's painfully shy.
No, but I'm saying there are a lot of guys that are painfully shy, but they don't have that aura. They don't have that, like,
Johnny
iconic
Depp
kind of thing.
Johnny Depp seems like he would have that aura as much as is possible.
Who?
Johnny Depp. Like, every time I see him being interviewed, he's always, like, in this weird, spacey, cool guy mode.
Yeah,
like,
no, exactly.
Hey,
I want to smack him.
And he with a slight English accent.
De Niro's not pretentious. He doesn't put on airs. He is what he is, and he's a.
But I gotta believe.
But there are lots of people that aren't pretentious.
I gotta Bob Denver.
You don't
I gotta
think
believe
so?
big
stars.
Well, Denver
that's
was
not
never
what makes
pretentious.
People want to stare is that he's not pretentious. I'm saying, what is it about somebody that makes people want to stare? I guess it's just all the roles, right?
Yeah,
it's all
because
the roles that you've internalized growing up.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They're seeing the guy from Goodfellas saying, hey, you're going to put up, you know, they're seeing that guy.
From right. Main Streets to fucking The Godfather.
Raging,
I mean,
right,
come
right,
on.
Yeah. Right.
He's contributed. Godfather right. Too. Yeah, he's contributed
Look, if
some
I,
great
I mean,
movies.
When somebody's part of your life, if I met Molly Ringwald, I would probably be starstruck because
she's like 185 now.
She represents such an important time in my life. Before darkness fell.
Before darkness fell.
My last couple of good years before it all fell apart. That's what she represents for me.
Well, Molly?
Molly does. Yeah, 85, 86. That was for me. That was before it all came crashing down.
two decades ago.
I know. Jesus it's been Christ. A long time I've been in this hole.
It crashed when you were 11?
No, I was like 16. But 17 is when it kind of... Got out from under me.
You did, Nick. You did a big scene with Giamatti, right? Paul Giamatti.
Well, I mean, he was in. It was that was the 12 Angry Men thing. So it was more of a.
What was he
it?
Like?
Was he was great.
Ensemble.
He was as cool as a. You know, we were talking. He goes, hey. He goes, we're standing next to each other. Yeah. He goes, my agent keeps sending me every role I go offer, I'm an asshole. I go, yeah, me too. You're getting the roles.
Yeah,
but
he's
couldn't
a hell of an actor,
he
that
was
dude.
So cool. After my big scene, he goes, hey, man, you got to fucking do more of this shit.
Yeah, he's having a great year. Who, Giamatti, De Niro, who else?
Todd Norton. Barry, Kevin Brennan, and the Kevin Brennan story.
And now this radio with Dan.
No, and Horace and Pete, Louis' thing. It's, I mean, Edie Falco, Alan Alda, Steve Buscemi, Jessica Lange, Paul Giamatti last year, De Niro. I'm just, you know.
That's amazing.
I was shooting that.
I got lucky.
Yeah, last week. And,
it's not luck.
And I was shooting that show today and met de Blasio. De Blasio came
why'd
in the marathon.
Why'd you just rain on my parade and fucking
No, I'm not raining on your parade. I was telling, you know, I'm on a fucking radio. I don't know what to say. I don't love,
De Blasio.
You know, Don't
get Nick started.
I don't like him politically,
but he couldn't be a sweeter guy.
I mean, Mustafa and Hatem came in last night.
Mustafa was here last night?
Mustafa
what
was
time
last...
did he come?
I didn't see Mustafa.
I saw Hatem.
He was right before the show. He was here with Hatem.
I saw Hatem hitting a Jewish
and
guy.
And both of them are leaning towards Trump.
Yeah, exactly.
And neither of them were offended by Trump's anti-Muslim stuff.
Yeah, that's smarter than the average fucking stupid American.
I mean, because Jim's a Trump supporter, Nick's a Trump supporter.
Yeah.
He won me over. I wasn't from the beginning, but fucking after seeing, are we going to get into this? Let's talk
about
something.
Well, Noam always figures out a way to do it. I was damn impressed with that transition. Oh, that was good. Oh, that was good, baby.
I love the tension between these two. When I'm in the car, I laugh my balls off. You guys.
Because Nick said to me yesterday, he has his own radio, his own show now, podcast, radio, whatever it is. He says, I promise not to talk about politics, but all he wants to talk about is politics, right?
Yeah.
And I identify with it. First of all, it's new every day. It's interesting. It's what the whole fucking country's talking
the
about.
The whole world right now.
Yeah.
I mean, Trump is apropos.
Jim, you talk about it on your show, right?
Yeah, we do. It gets a little boring sometimes, but I mean, he's in the news.
It.
I mean, it's hard not to.
I'm only doing an hour, and I'm by myself. There's no guests, no phone calls.
Anyway, I think it might be interesting for people to know that these two Muslim guys, born in Egypt and in Palestine.
Yeah.
Both of them like, you know, I get it. There's a real problem with Islam.
Well,
Trump's just
talking. Are they Muslim or not?
Yeah, that's apropos.
Big time.
Yeah.
That's apropos, but it would be better if maybe we invite him to come in, say, in a week or two.
Okay, we can do that.
And say, here's
what are you? No.
Well, now say, here's our former. What did Hatem do here again?
Well, Hatem was the door guy. And
Mustafa
went from being a waiter to the door guy to Dave Chappelle's manager
valet.
And negotiator. He's
right.
He negotiated Dave Chappelle's Comedy Central deal, the one Dave walked out on.
How was that not a movie or a TV show?
He negotiated that?
He negotiated that.
Could you meet my agent, Al Shabaab?
talk about immigrant story. You know, he came here with nothing. Starts as a waiter in the Olive Tree and finds himself.
And he leaves with nothing.
Doing million-dollar deals
and
at Comedy Central.
And after they've walked out, he's back to nothing.
And he sued Chappelle, and then they're friends again.
Yeah.
We should bring him on.
They are friends again?
Yeah, they're friends again.
Yeah, that's a show.
Somebody walked out on me, it wouldn't
be
my friend.
That's a fucking movie right there.
Yeah.
Not a Jew mentioned in the whole thing. That's kind of weird.
He feels that the reason he does stuff like that, he says, because Americans are soft. They're entitled, and if they feel they have to work hard, they feel it's not fair.
Yes.
That's what he feels.
That's why he
was able to do it.
Check mark.
That's why Steve Fabricant is going to be out there forever.
So we're going to bring Stratton? What's his name?
Yeah, when you get Stratton, you guys, okay.
We have this guy, he's a former drug dealer, and and he had done some prison time. No, Noam found him, and it seems like an interesting cat. No,
right, Noam found him.
Noam found him.
Noam found the man at a park. He's giving
him
money.
I think he's right behind you.
No, do you want me to get up and he can sit here?
Yeah, that's good.
That's fine.
All right, Dove. Well, that was Dove David.
All right, God
bless. And we'll see you. You can see Dove in the upcoming movie with Robert De Niro, which I forgot the name of it.
Dove's a good actor.
Dove is one of the best.
Yeah.
He's not a good actor. He's one of the best.
You ever look at your friends and think, how bad were things with me when I met you? You know, like, how bad did I feel about myself when I thought you'd be a reasonable person to share experiences with? This guy's still, like, he's an hour late. Every time I see him, he's always late, you know? And he's an hour late and still blames. He'll blame it on his horoscope. Could you imagine an adult male blaming something? I go, Mike, you're an hour late. He goes, what do you do, bro? He goes, I'm a Capricorn. I was like, what the fuck did you do? Could you have, I thought you were, oh, I thought it was because you were a fucking idiot. I didn't realize we should check the moon before making plans. Like, and then, so I opened the, I looked in the paper, and I looked to see, like, is there any legitimate significance with regard to horoscopes? And there may be, ultimately, some zodiac significance, but it's very broad. I look in the paper. Every horoscope applies to every person. Every single person, every horoscope. It's literally like, ooh, Virgo. You know, this weekend you don't like to get hit in the face as a Virgo. You know, you tend to shy away from a cheek slap. As someone born in September, when people beat you in the face, you tend to, it's not for you as a Virgo, it's ow, as a Virgo. You know, also Libra, if you're camping and you fall asleep on a snake, you're going to want to roll away, Libras, because as a Libra, venom for you in the face, a face venom for a Libra is not for you as a Libra. You tend to experience it as toxic, as someone born in October.
My friend, Stephen Calabria, a writer for the Huffington Post, called me effusive and gushing because he said, we have to meet this man, Richard Stratton, who was a drug smuggler and an author, and has had profiles written about him in New York Magazine and things like that. So welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you.
Now, you're sitting at a table of greatness, because we've had one of the best here on this show. You're familiar, of course, with, what's that guy's name again?
Which guy?
From Midnight Express?
Bobby.
Willie Hayes?
Billy Hayes.
Yeah. Now, one of the best.
I want to specify that I was a marijuana and hashish smuggler.
Talk right into the mic.
A cannabis smuggler. So I don't know if that makes me a drug smuggler anymore. Since it's virtually
it's legal.
What year did you start smuggling drugs?
I started in the mid-60s when I was a student at Arizona State University. I started smuggling like a kilo or two back across the border from Mexico, bringing it back to Boston, which is where I came from, selling it to my friends and making what then was a lot of money.
Southie?
Were you? I know Jim has another question, but were you aware at the time of what the penalty you were risking was at that time?
At that time, actually, it was quite substantial in those days. But I will say that when I was sentenced here in New York under the continuing criminal enterprise, the Kingpin statute, I was facing a minimum of 10 up to life with no possibility of parole. Had I been sentenced 2 years later, I would have received a mandatory life sentence. And in fact, two guys were just sentenced to life with no parole up in Syracuse, New York, for smuggling pot. It's still on the books to this day.
That's crazy. Go ahead.
What method would you use to get 2 kilos across the border?
Well, in those days, it was easy. We used to just hide it behind the door panel in my roommate's truck. But then, you know, years later, we graduated to using planes and boats, and then...
Planes?
Planes, yeah. And then we started doing...
You flew on the planes?
Yes.
Wait, did you write a book called Adventures on the Marijuana Trail or something like that?
No, I wrote a book called Smuggler's Blues, which is just out right now. Just came out.
I always love a good drug book, or drug any story is always good.
Pablo Escobar.
And as you may not know, because we don't know each other, but I'm a little late to the party, but I'm starting to watch Breaking Bad. And I don't know if you're familiar with that show.
Well, Breaking Bad, I'm very familiar with that show. It's a really interesting show.
I'm fascinated. So you actually flew on the plane from where to where?
Well, I flew from several planes, from Jamaica into the United States, from Mexico into the United States.
Were you the pilot?
No, I was like a co-pilot. I always had hired pilots that I worked with.
And did you ever work with Barry Seal?
No, but I know who Barry Seal is.
What about Sullenberger?
Why would you fly on the plane? Why wouldn't you? I would think I would want to have as little risk to myself as possible.
Well, you know, I think I've often said I think the reason that I did what I did was because I was an action junkie and I enjoyed the adrenaline rush of it. When I was really a freshman in college at Arizona State University and I smuggled that first 2 kilos in across the border, it was such a rush. It's like gambling, really. It's very similar to the kind of adrenaline rush that you get.
So it's not the money?
The money was secondary. It was really secondary. It was all about that excitement and living on the edge and how that becomes really addictive.
What's the time that you came close to getting caught but didn't? There must have been a time where something almost went wrong and you just missed getting busted.
Well, it happened several times and I ended up getting busted. I got busted in 1978 on a big hashish case here in New York that we ended up beating because, interestingly enough, the DEA had stolen the load and sold it to some other people. So when it came to them having to produce the load, and we knew they sold it because I was living in the Chelsea Hotel at that time, and these dealers that I knew kept coming to my room and showing me my own hash and saying, it's on the street. People are selling it. So we knew when they arrested us that they couldn't produce the evidence. And my lawyer said, where is the hashish? Kept going, where is the hashish? And they couldn't produce it, so they dropped the case.
Wow.
Is it the Chelsea Hotel? Is that next to Gotham Comedy Club? Was El Quijote restaurant there in those days?
El Quijote restaurant, yeah, that was my hangout.
Oh, I've eaten there.
It's a wonderful.
Anything else?
No, it's just interesting to hear how many ways of avoiding prison there are. Like, there's always, you know, we recognize our own drugs on the street, and they couldn't produce the drugs. How many guys wish that had happened? Like, what a lucky way that is to get away with.
And now at your peak, what kind of revenue was going back and forth?
Well, the last trip that I did, the one that ended up being the focus of this trial here in the Southern District of New York, was 15,000 pounds of hashish. Oof. That we brought in from Lebanon.
We brought it in.
We brought it in these dates. I bought like 1.5 million kilos of dates in Iraq and shipped them overland to Beirut. And then we hid the hashish in under the dates and got it all in. In fact, they never seized any of it. But I got arrested on what they call a dry conspiracy. They arrested the Lebanese guys a couple years later, and they ratted me out. And the feds brought me to trial, and they charged me under the continuing criminal enterprise statute. My end alone on that trip was $5 million because it was basically a $15 million wholesale trip, and I made about $5
million. All cash.
All cash.
Now, where is it buried?
Is that a RICO charge?
Can I ask?
We're going to bury you.
How does a college student get to the point where they're in Lebanon, you know, what you just described? What's kind of the trajectory to go from Arizona State to this?
So after having smuggled a couple of small loads of marijuana in the early 60s, I became basically a freak, a hippie. Grew my hair, and then it was like there was this kind of hippie highway that you went on when you went to Nepal, you went to Afghanistan, you went to India, trying to find the best cannabis that the world had to offer. And then we started using these suitcases with false bottoms in it and smuggling the hash back into the United States. And then as we got bigger and bigger and bigger, then we came boats, sailboats, airplanes, and finally what we call the commercial smuggle, which was where you would go to a country and buy a product that was in demand in this country and then hide the hash in there and actually take it right through customs. That last one that we did landed in Newark and went through customs.
Yeah, people don't smoke a lot of hash in America, do they? It's more of a European drug. But
we ended up having to sell a lot of that in Canada, actually. So, Canadians love hash.
You're how old?
Am I now?
Can I ask you that? Yeah.
70.
70 years old, and you're free.
I'm old and free.
And you've had an amazing life. Would you do it all again? I mean, you must have had fun every day of your life.
Very good question, by the way, Noah.
Well, you know what I would have to say about this, and we've just been talking about this. We were right as far as cannabis was concerned. You know, I was one of the founders of High Times magazine. And we knew back then that ultimately we would come to this day, that this whole reefer madness was madness. And that marijuana was not the dangerous drug that.
Now hold on, I'm gonna correct you there for a second, because I one time freaked out on marijuana. I have a delicate constitution.
That's anecdotal, Dan. Yeah.
You can freak out on marijuana. I'm not saying that you can't, but it is also a very beneficial substance to.
My father smoked every day of his life.
Yeah, a lot of people smoke every day of their lives. You know, and it has not done anything. Bob Marley was, and look at Willie Nelson. There's a guy who smokes a lot.
You still smoke?
Do I know? Yeah. I don't smoke.
How much
anything.
Time did you do?
I did 8 years total.
Okay.
I was sentenced to 25 years here in the Southern District of New York, but fortunately for me, the judge said, the reason I'm giving you so much time, because I argued, it's only marijuana, judge, what are you doing? She said, the reason I'm giving you so much time is because you refused to cooperate with the government.
You didn't rat nobody out. Good for you.
Didn't rat anybody out. And the guy that they were looking for was Norman Mailer, who was a very close friend of mine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting the circle of people.
Hippie, yeah. The hippie godfather.
So. And now there's a TV show that's in the works?
There is a TV show, and the book just came out, Smuggler's Blues. I'll keep
yeah, sure.
Well,
hyping
yep,
that.
Good.
You know, and I will say Breaking Bad's a fantastic show. The first three seasons I thought were great. Then it started to go a little bit downhill, but you know,
it's hard to maintain that pace for five seasons. But I'm telling you, I mean, you know, I'm in season five now, and I'm still pretty hooked.
It's fun. Yeah,
so you do regret it or you don't regret it?
No, I don't regret it.
You don't regret it?
I don't regret it. I didn't even regret the 8 years I spent in prison. It was a fascinating experience.
Really?
Did anything terrible, any horrible things happen in prison? I think prison has just got to be the worst. I mean,
where were you, upstate?
No, I was in the federal system, so I started out in Lewisburg, and I did see a guy get stabbed to death in Lewisburg, and there was a lot of, there was a bad shit that happened. I mean, the Aryan Brotherhood, and you know, there was a lot of negative stuff, but ultimately...
They left you alone?
They left me
alone.
Didn't,
you weren't forced to join the Aryan Brotherhood?
No. Yeah, how did you get away from
that? What year was
that,
Richard, when you were at Lewisburg?
Lewisburg was 84, 85, then from there I went to Petersburg, and from Petersburg I went to Ashland, Kentucky. And then I went to Raybrook. The feds move you around as your time starts to go down.
Why What's the trick to being left alone in prison?
You know, the thing about prison is your currency in prison is respect. If you treat other people with respect and you carry yourself with respect, by and large, people will leave you alone. I remember I was locked up originally with these guys that were part of the Brotherhood of Eternal Love, which was a bunch of guys from... They were white Rastas that they were smuggling pot in from Jamaica. And when I met them, they said, look, stay away from gambling, from homosexual activity, and drugs. If you stay away from those three things in prison, you're going to be all right.
Yeah, but that's all the fun you can have.
That's all the fun you can have.
Jim had two out of three.
Sometimes it's forced on you, isn't it?
So I had to give up my girlfriend. I had to give up pot. Yeah.
So if you carry yourself like you're not going to take any shit, but you're not trying to come, the people usually won't bother you.
That's right.
Yeah, but now if like Jared from Subway recently, because he's in there for child molestation. If you're a child molester, you do get fucked with, I imagine, no matter what you do.
If you're a child molester or you're a rat or you're an informant, then you got to have problems. No question.
I probably would just tell the warden if people hassled me, and I would let them know that I'm friends with the guards.
Then you'd be sure to get killed.
Demographics have changed, too.
What do you feel? I'm curious. What do you feel about legalizing other drugs? Do you think they should legalize heroin?
I think they should legalize all drugs. Yeah.
All drugs.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that it's a law enforcement issue. It's really a medical health issue. And you know that I think that it's even been shown that marijuana use is going down in those states where it's legal.
But now I think you may be onto something with legalizing drugs. But we will, as a society, think of what we'll lose: Breaking Bad, Scarface, some of the greatest films and TV shows of all time are based on drugs being illegal.
That's true, and it's a great, interesting, and fascinating world. But
I mean, it was a joke, but it's also true.
Yes.
But when you I feel the same way about Hitler. Did a lot of bad, but look at the film and TV.
I disagree with the bad part, but go ahead.
Yeah,
I like his old stuff.
It's great fodder for writing. Certainly, it's worked well for me.
What about women?
What about women?
Were women and hookers?
Arizona
State,
come on.
Is that a big part of the drug kingpin lifestyle?
Well, you know, actually, there were. Big. I mean, the girls were incredible, but the most fun I had in prison was when I was here in the Metropolitan Correctional Center, which is the federal holding facility that's right over here. There are women in that jail, and in those days, you could actually have little meetings with these women from time to time.
Really?
So, yeah, so that was...
Would you have to pay a
laid
guard?
In prison by,
sex in jail, I've written
You'd have
about
to pay
that.
A guard, right?
You pay the guard, or you just get a job down in the kitchen, and the girls are down there, and...
That's where the knives are.
It was interesting. That's where the knives are.
You probably lower your standards, though, when you're in jail. Like a girl that you might not fuck out of jail, you'd in jail you.
Yeah, like a girl named Dave.
That's true. But there were some hot ones in there, I must say.
Oh, there were.
Yeah.
Puerto Rican guards.
And by a show of heads, has anybody here done time? Nick?
No. Hey, what was that?
I did one
night.
That's
not that fucking stereotypical.
For what?
One night. I was doing a radio stunt with Lewis Black. We spent the night in jail together because we were naked girls on the bus, and they pulled us over, and we had to shit. That was the worst part, was not having a comfortable place to shit.
Well, you know, the worst part of it, and I have to say, where I was, they would inspect your asshole sometimes two or three times a day. I mean, that with
No, I don't like my asshole fumbled with. Yeah, it's like, we joke about
bend
my asshole.
Over,
two or three times a day?
In some of these places, just to fuck with you.
Did any guys try to get frisky?
Who's the warden, Paul Lynn?
Did any guys try to get frisky? Like,
Norton's getting
no,
all
but I'm serious. Like, will you have to like put your foot down and go, no?
No, you know, I had a situation once where I was up at Otisville, which is right here in New York, and I was on my way to the recreation yard in the morning, had a pair of shorts on, a T-shirt, and this guard comes running out, and he grabs me, stops me, he says, are you wearing underpants? I looked at him, I go, what? What are you talking about? He said, have you got underpants on? I said, well, who wants to know? And he goes, the associate warden just asked me to come out and check and see if you got underpants on. I was like, what are you, out of your mind? You know, he just wanted to see. And I said, yeah, I got underpants on. So I had to pull down my pants, my shorts, and show him that I had underpants on. Because apparently they had women guards that were coming into the institution, and they didn't want guys walking around with their Johnsons hanging free.
Oh, okay.
You know, they didn't want the women guards to get too excited.
Oh, wow. Okay. So he didn't want to see your dick. He was legitimately had to ask. Okay. I thought that was just a ruse by him. I'm like, what a clever move by the guard.
That's the absurdity of being in prison, man. Yeah. When they can ask you if you got underpants on and look up your ass. That's how bad it gets.
What is the thing? There are guys that actually fuck the female guards. And how does that happen where a guy can talk his way into a guard's panties? I mean, that's got to be an amazing rap.
You know, there was actually here at MCC, the female guards were running a prostitution ring for a while. For $200, they would come into your cell after lockdown and, you know, give you a blowjob or whatever, whatever your choice was.
But if you're a male guard, it's very dangerous to fuck females because they save the common and they threaten to sue you.
Yeah.
That's a dangerous thing.
A lot of sex in jail is a...
It's rape, right? It's legally considered rape if you're a male guard.
We all as
but every female guard now on TV is gay. Every episode of Lockup I watch, it's always like a, you know, butch type.
Thanks.
We in comedy, we're all stand-up comedians, except for Noam and Kristen. But we make a lot of, well, I do anyway, a lot of comedic hay out of the whole prison rape thing. I don't know, is that hack, everybody?
No, we did it with the De Niro scene in the movie yesterday.
But how exaggerated or not exaggerated is that?
I think it's exaggerated. Look, I was in the federal system, and people will say that it's worse in the state, some of these state institutions. But I think there is a lot more talk about it than there is actual rape going on in prison. I mean, look, there are obviously a number of people who are locked up who are bisexual, for lack of a better... And because there's only men in there, they're fucking other men. But if you're not into that way of life and you make that clear, they're going to leave you alone,
even
by and large.
It's not a way of asserting power over another guy?
I'm sure that happens, but I don't think it's as widespread as it's made out to be. I think a lot of that has to do with the fear factor of trying to scare people out of going to prison.
Yeah, I'd be more afraid of getting beaten up.
Beaten up?
Yeah.
Can I just ask, when you, once you were locked up, is that when you decided, okay, that's it? Or was there a time where you thought, I'm going to start, you know, once I get out, I'll kick it up again? Or was that pretty much ended your career?
Well, the interesting thing is that I was a writer before I went to prison. As I said, I was involved in the founding of High Times magazine, and I had written for Rolling Stone and other publications. So always in the back of my mind, there was this idea that ultimately, I'm going to write about this, and that I was very interested in the whole political movement of ultimately legalizing marijuana. So when I got arrested, I thought, and it was a very dramatic arrest. It happened out in Los Angeles. I was in this hotel, and I was walking through the lobby with a guy that I thought was a friend of mine, and all of a sudden, I see these guys leaping over the desk and pulling guns, and they were all around us. So at that point, I was like, okay, this is it. Now I'm going to prison, and I'll go back to doing what I was really supposed to be doing all these years, writing. So,
did you write in prison? You must have wrote a ton.
I wrote a novel that got published in 1990.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Do you guys feel like all of a sudden, like a real man sat down at this table.
Hey, fuck you, man. I just fought rush hour traffic to get here, Cox.
You feel that way? Like, also, well, we're nothing.
Well, it's amazing how we ask men, like, prison guys who've been in prison, we ask these, like, fucking girly questions. Did they try to touch your hiney? Like, it's a world well, you we know, can't comprehend.
Your definition of a man is somebody who went to fucking prison.
No, I don't mean just being in prison. I mean, the taking risks, living with the risk of physical danger.
Look, you're a creature of
the suburbs. That's a different question. Yes.
I
don't need this guy to make me...
Are we jealous of his life?
I don't need this guy to make me feel like not a man. If you can change a tire, you make me feel like not a man.
Yeah.
But, you know, just to go
back to your
question.
That's how far down I am on the scale.
It's not jealous.
There was a lot of temptation after I got out to go back into that world. But then again, when you're facing life with no parole, if I had been busted again, it would have been automatic life. I married, actually... a woman by the name of Kim Wozencraft, my first wife, who had written a book called Rush about... she was an undercover narcotics cop. And she'd gone to prison. So we had that...
Wasn't that a movie
experience
eventually?
Together. We made a movie out of it, yeah.
Jennifer Jason Leigh?
Jennifer Jason Leigh, right.
Yeah, hell of a movie, too. Yeah,
what was the name of that film again?
Rush,
baby.
Oh, good movie. That sounds like a good movie, baby.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
But no, you're quite right. You are a creature of the suburb, and it's... That's what you are, but
I did a night
no
in prison.
I've done.
Well, no, I mean not time, but you know, I mean I was arrested for felony assault.
Not just the prison.
I was arrested for felony assault. I cut a dude's head open with a blade.
Yeah, just living a life of danger, really.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, you're a barber.
Physical danger.
No, it's real shit.
Your
but yeah, no.
Well, you know, I have performed for all black audiences. There is somewhat of a dangerous component there. Are you familiar with stand-up, by the way? You know, we have a club right downstairs if you'd like to go. You seem like a mild-mannered guy. And
He's got the bearing of a military man.
Yeah, he's hard. He's what we call impassable, I think. Is that the word? Noam, you have a good vocabulary.
I don't know that word.
Maybe I might have made it up.
I always thought of that as a large mountain.
but you know,
impassable.
You seem very,
thoughtful.
You know, thoughtful and measured.
Well, thank you. I take that as a compliment.
Well,
he's a writer. Waters.
Well, he's a real man, and you're
half a broad. Wonder if you've ever been to a stand-up comedy show.
He doesn't want to watch a filthy comedy.
But you can go. You can take him down now. You want to take him to see? You want to take him to see the show?
Yeah, I'd love
to
go down and see the show, for sure.
Be our pleasure.
Great.
All right, we're just about out of time.
I would be remiss, Noam, by the way, as artists, this affects... The Screen Actors Guild after President Ken Howard died.
Seriously?
Yeah.
From Ken Howard, White Shadow?
White Shadow. He was a SAG after president.
Him and Joe Garagiola, you know, they come in threes.
But so he we're all in SAG, I believe. Well, Noam's in the Shish Kebab Union. 71.
Noam is in the Hummus 205 local.
Well, in memoriam.
He was 71 years old.
White Shadow.
The Baba Ganoush, 6902 local. right, Teamsters.
So what I want to just know if we can just
set a Teamsters.
Where can we look forward to seeing this show?
Well, what you can do is buy the book.
The title and everything.
Smugglers
Blues.
That's also
out
a George
right
Thorogood song.
Yes, it was a George Thorogood song.
Is it available on Kindle?
It is available. I don't know if it's available on Kindle yet.
And are you going to read the audiobook?
I am going to read the audiobook.
That ought to be
He's
awesome.
Got a great voice.
Yeah. Wonderful. You'd be great.
Yeah.
And there was a big piece in Sunday Daily News, a big two-page spread about the book, which
about the book.
Is kind of cool.
Wait, so the TV show is still in, like, development, or is that?
Yeah. Development.
I did a TV show called Street Time. I don't know if anybody ever saw that. It was on Showtime for 3 years.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Starred Terrence Howard and Rob Moore.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. My wife used to watch
it. It was about parole and people coming out of prison on parole. Yeah. I created that show and ran. I was the showrunner. So ultimately, Smuggler's Blues. But, you know, now because of the success, the huge success of Breaking Bad, the networks are like, there's too much drug stuff out there. We're not really interested
in too much drug stuff is a phrase I've never uttered. I'll tell you that.
I have one other question.
I can't get enough of that shit.
Would you rate the average IQ of the people that you were associated with to be higher or lower than the average IQ of people in other businesses or things like that?
Well, the particular group that I was involved with, which was called the so-called hippie mafia, was mostly white, middle class, people who had been involved in psychedelics and in cannabis smuggling. They were a different category of criminal from... say bank robbers or
they were bright guys.
Bright guys, very bright guys.
No, yeah, exactly. White guys.
Did you hear him say white?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but people that are good at that generally tend to be. I think it's a pretty much like other curves in other businesses. Right. The people that tend to be better at the thing are generally relatively
bright.
That's
what I would think. They'd have to be pretty bright.
I've been around drug dealers, yeah.
And marijuana, I would think, is a little more rarefied than, say, your crystal meth, even though Walt White notwithstanding, who is a...
I'd say it's the opposite. I would say marijuana.
You would say marijuana is low-end IQ-wise?
No. I'm not saying IQ-wise either one. I'm just saying there's a lot of marijuana. Marijuana is half the cartel business. I thought you were saying that there's
saying
less
that
it, business.
No, I was saying that marijuana people probably are smarter than your crystal meth people.
Why is that?
Well, I just think of marijuana as just sort of a more high-end kind of thing.
Not big-time marijuana smuggling. You're talking about guys selling, you know, nickel bags on the sidewalk. Yeah, that's a different breed. But big-time marijuana smuggling, you get locked up for a long time.
Well, you do, but it does tend to attract
people.
A higher
caliber.
Yes.
You know, the thing about
Apparently it requires a great deal of planning,
yes, he is.
Planning and logistics, and that was the fascinating part of it. It was like playing chess, but with real lives and moving stuff around, trying to figure out how to get 15,000 pounds of hashish from the Bekaa Valley in the middle of a civil war in Lebanon.
To Massachusetts.
These guys are talking about sets. I'm explaining to them that I'm not that impressed with actors. I'm not that impressed with fucking show business. There was you're raining on the thing. That I'm impressed with. Do you know why? Because it's impressive. He didn't hit a mark and take cashews real well.
You need to develop a board game.
It's tremendous. These are the people in this country.
A video game.
The people in this country are always hollering about show business. It's not that fucking impressive.
Well, first of all, people in this country do love drug dealers, too. Breaking Bad
is a thing, and the guy's getting autographs in the street. You could be a fucking retard, fall off a television set, and people are like, can I get an autograph? You can win a war in Afghanistan, and nobody knows who you are. Listen to me. I know what I'm talking about.
We're out of time. We went a few minutes over, just enough time so they can cut out Dan's remarks.
About the movie.
I want to apologize about my remarks about the movie. I didn't hear anything. I was trying to provoke a conversation.
This was really a pleasure to meet you, really.
An actor plays a guy. Everybody's talking about. He's the real guy that they're playing.
Richard, what was your major?
It bothers me.
De Niro played him.
What is this guy?
Came up in the last 3 minutes. Fucking guy.
I got excited.
What was your major at Arizona State?
English.
Oh, it was English. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. French literature.
Actor. Plays the guy. Everybody's jerking off an actor.
People got to get perspective. I don't think anybody
Bob
would be.
Was a smart guy.
I don't think anybody would be unimpressed with this gentleman to my left.
Listen to me. People are jerking off goofball actors. I'm not saying great ones. I'm saying in general, you've got real men doing real things that we should attribute some of that reverence for. Okay. Go ahead. I'm right. Now go ahead.
I see your point, but I think it's overstated.
He's got a John Voight quality to him.
Yeah, that's very good.
John Voight, Massachusetts. I'm from the North Shore.
Wellesley, believe it or not.
From Wellesley, rich suburb.
I know. I have no excuse for having chosen a life of crime.
No, maybe that's the exact excuse.
Your excuse is you're a real man. That's why you didn't become an actor.
I love that.
You're a real man.
Hey, take it easy.
Okay, sorry, Nick. My bad.
I played football for a couple of years.